Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Tales to Terrify, part of the District of Wonders network. Featuring Starship Sofa and Farfetched Fables, everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
Good evening, children of the night, and welcome. I'm happy to be back with you after my brief winter escape, although less happy to be back in the land of ice and snow. We won't linger here long, though. We've got ground to cover elsewhere. Our next stop is Birmingham, Alabama. The largest city by population in the state of Alabama, Birmingham's roots are made of steel. After the damage and devastation of the Civil War, there was a lot to rebuild, and Birmingham quickly became a coal-fired beacon of hope and restoration, feeding the voracious appetite that recovering industry and infrastructure had for metal. But keeping up with that kind of demand wasn't easy. Sloss Furnaces of Birmingham was one of the largest producers of the pig iron needed to produce steel products, and the fires there burned hot and bright night and day. To keep the furnaces running and producing iron, that meant hundreds of workers sweating and toiling around the clock in incredible heat and uncomfortable conditions. In fact, most lived there on the furnace site in dirty, cramped housing. Long hours, hard labor, and poor living conditions were bad enough, but if you were unlucky enough to draw the graveyard shift, your life, quite literally, was on the line. James Slag Wormwood led the graveyard shift between sunrise and sunset at Sloss Furnaces. At any given time, there were over 100 workers under his lead, and he was less than popular, to say the least. Even in a tough industry like steelwork, Slag had built a reputation for being a cruel hard ass. He seemed to delight in pushing workers to their limits and beyond. Always looking to impress his employer, Slag would force those unfortunate enough to be under his command to take dangerous risks to gain even the smallest increase in production speed. No coincidence, then, that a total of 47 workers lost their lives under his supervision, 10 times more than any other shift. And those may have been the lucky ones. Many others were left injured and unable to work due to horrific accidents on the job site, including 6 men who were left blind after an explosion in the small blowing engine house. In October of 1906, though, things took a sudden turn. During one late-night shift, James Wormwood took the long climb up to the top of the highest blast furnace, known as Big Alice. No one was sure what he was doing up there. He had no clear reason to make the difficult climb, And in his entire time working at Sloss Furnaces, he'd never gone up on top of the furnace. Now that he was up there, though, standing on the catwalk, overlooking the giant swirling pool of melted iron, the heat and the methane gas created by the furnace caused his head to swim and spin. Before he could brace himself, he lost his footing and tumbled off of the catwalk, plummeting into the vat of glowing molten metal below. At more than 3,200 degrees Fahrenheit, or 1,800 degrees Celsius, the liquid metal melted his body almost instantly, with little more than a plop and a hiss. Now, if the story of Slag Wormwood's death leaves you feeling skeptical, you're not alone. That someone so used to building his own success at the expense of others would go out of their way to put themselves in such a dangerous place seems pretty unlikely. There were a lot of people who stood to benefit from sending Slag to a quick and violent end. Unsurprisingly, there were rumors that the workers had finally had enough of his slave driving and had dragged Slag to the top of the furnace and had thrown him down to a molten, fiery death. But no specific accusations were ever leveled. Things at Sloss Furnaces should have gotten a lot better after that, which in some ways they did. But not long after Slag's disappearance, strange things started to occur. There was an unnatural presence on the job site, workers complained. A presence that had pushed them around and yelled at them in an angry, disembodied voice to get back to work. One evening, three supervisors were discovered unconscious and locked in a small boiler room. A blackened, charred, and blistered man, they said, had attacked them and screamed at them to push more steel. The graveyard shift was discontinued not long after. To date, Birmingham police have logged more than 100 reports of suspected paranormal activity at Sloss Furnaces. Today, the site's been restored and designated as a National Historic Landmark. It plays host to metal arts classes, food festivals, concerts, and other events, including being turned into a haunted house on Halloween. But the darker side of Sloss Furnace's history is still a draw for many people, too. In fact, you can experience the impressive and ominous sight for yourself after dark on one of their historic night tours. But that's enough touring for one night. Time for some fiction. Our first story comes from David Whittaker. David Whittaker is originally from the UK, though has traveled around a bit and now resides in India. He has a degree in journalism, however decided that, as he's always preferred making things up, it should ultimately become a resource rather than a profession. His stories, covering everything from sci-fi and horror to philosophy, have been published across the globe, and links to each can be found at wordsbydavid.com. Join me for David Whittaker's Do You Dig? A Tales to Terrify original.
She's dead. My client looked at me, glassy-eyed, in a puffed-up face, a fish out of water, in a gloomy hole I like to call my office. Well, yes, but you can fix that, right, Mr. Crow? Of course I can, but dying's better than dead, I replied, poking her face, watching the cold skin dent and shift, white on white on white. She was a cute young thing, difficult to believe she'd been his wife, but stranger things had happened. Dead's a pain, makes the work a little harder. Simply dying's always such a boon. You couldn't have brought it to me any sooner. It was sudden. I don't see how... His discomfort was delightful, all twitching lips and furrowed brow. I flicked her hair, and smelled her skin, the scent of a life just past lingering and thin. Payments in advance. You don't like the end result? It's no concern of mine. You dig? Sure, I understand, he said, but hesitated to follow through. Is it true? She won't remember anything at all? Not a thing, not a bit, not a jot. What's once lost is never truly returned. The slate's wiped clean, but I guarantee you, you'll at least receive a working slate. He swallowed, a fleeting fight waged behind watery gaze, before the paper finally hit my desk. Neat little bundles, all wrapped up in rubber bands, deposited by shaky hands and sweaty palms. Much obliged, I grinned, sweeping them beneath my wing. The girl followed close behind. How did you... I didn't stick around to hear the rest. I never do. Time once bought is best not wasted, and I had work awaiting. The lass was heavier than I'd expected, her death pulling at her hard and strong. The dead never as light as the merely dying, but nothing I couldn't manage. I carried her from my office to the docks, swinging through the park along the way. Around me, the city shuffled through its daily motions. Lives played out rich and full of color. Occasionally, I caught a glimpse of gray, the fruits of prior labor. But sightings were few and far between. My services were not well known, though as a matter of my choice, as opposed to any kind of failing. Touching down outside the harbor master's lodge, I knocked 3 times and waited. Yeah? The voice came muffled through the door. Mr. Crow, requesting passage. I bowed, doffing my imaginary hat. How many? Just me and mine. I pulled the girl from beneath my wing, her hair limp and haphazard around her face. With cupped chin, I displayed her, fingers digging into cheeks and jaw, white on white on white. Right then, 1 for passage, 1 piece of luggage to accompany, the voice rumbled. 1 way? You wish. Return journey if it's all the same to you. Suit yourself, the door replied. That'll be 4 coins in all. Payable now or on return makes no difference to us. On return, as you well know, I smirked, securing the lass anew. Which pier? Pier 3. Return ticket valid for 24 hours only. Passage is non-refundable. Isn't everything, I said, turning from the door and heading for the water. They say all rivers lead to the sea, and the river of the dead is no exception. Want to tread its icy waters? Simply head to open ocean and search for where the depths are darkest and cold beyond compare. The chill nestling in my bones, the back of the abyss closing in, I swam and swam and swam. When I reached the land of death and decay, the final resting place of all that ever was and ever will be, I retrieved the girl from beneath my wing and placed her at its heart. In my time, I have witnessed souls of every color, size, and shape. The deepest black to purest white, tiny, glittering specks to fiery, glowing orbs, irregular jumbles of flickering light to elegantly woven nests of gold. The lass's soul, when it eventually emerged, was one of the most pitiful I had ever seen. I'd expected something bubblegum pink, wispy, and innocent as a babe. What I got was a twisted, damaged little ball, fear on pain and despair. Ugh, I muttered, surveying my meal with grave distaste and opening my jaws. She was supposed to be sweet. However, all I tasted as she went down was bitterness and bile, a flavor fit to make my stomach roll. Ordinarily, I'd clean my plate, but a dish that foul I could not abide. Setting a few of the choicer parts aside, I'd reached within my mouth and retrieved my hidden package, the delicate, downy form of a baby wren, my acquisition from the park, stowed where the harbor master couldn't hope to see. She twitched as I exposed her to the cold, breath catching, weak and frail. There, there, little one, I cooed, stroking her head with tender touch. Don't you worry about a thing. You just let Mr. Crow show you the way. With practiced ease, I positioned her on the dead girl's chest. Their hearts nudged into line. The wren, the lass, and the land of death makes three. The realm of decay has as little patience as I when work's to be done, and all too soon I felt her soul begin to lose its lock, her mortal coil too feeble to resist. A flick, a gasp, and her soul slipped free, straight into my waiting palms. A fresh, peeled soul is a delicate thing. Wait too long, it forgets how to live. A hand as experienced as mine, however, I had all the time in the world. Enough to add the sordid scraps of my foul feast. Enough to mix the two to one. Enough to stuff the bitter blend inside the lass's empty shell. I found my client in his bed, glassy eyes and a puffed-up face, a fish at home in a pond for which I'd little taste. "You know," I said, looming over him, "I don't really appreciate being lied to."
"What? Who?"
he gasped in the dark. "Mr. Crow, is that you?" I felt him shift beneath me, limbs wriggling beneath the quilt, but my weight, astride his chest, the covering pinned him firm. My services are aimed at those unable to release their hold upon the ones they love, I explained, choosing my words with care. The ones who would take a shade of those they've lost. Because living on with their grey shadow is better than living without a part of them at all.
"I can't move, Mr. Crow. Could you get off me, please? Let me at least turn on my light."
I flicked my tongue between my teeth, but didn't shift. "Do you know what a soul tastes like?" I asked. "A soul that's been loved. A soul that's been cherished. A soul that's known true devotion to the extent that it cannot be let go."
What are you talking about?"
Straining muscles, unyielding fabric, a bed become a cage. "To say they are delicious is akin to calling the sun a mere touch bright," I continued. "Words have truly not yet been invented to do them justice, and none could ever be. They are like no dish you've ever tasted. A meal to end all meals, incomparable and sublime." Cocking my head, I stared at him in the dark, foul taste lingering in the back of my throat. "What I received from you was practically inedible." His struggles faltered, beads of sweat clinging to trembling lips and furrowed brow.
I don't know what you mean. You're talking nonsense. Please release me."
"If that was your wife, I am a human pure and true. An orphan, perhaps? Picked up from the streets? How long had you imprisoned her before her life came to a close? How many years? Was that by your hand as well, or had she finally reached her limit and thought she'd found an out?" He swallowed hard, his chest light beneath my bulk.
She would have been my wife. When you returned it to me, you said she wouldn't remember anything. Not a thing, not a bit, not a jot, right? She'd have accepted me then. She'd have stopped resisting.
I nodded. "Aye, with a soul that's delicious, I can't resist. I clean my plate. The soul you tried to feed me, however, I left a little bit behind." My weight suddenly removed, the cage lifted. He leapt from the covers and pressed himself flat against the wall, fingers grabbing for a candlestick, makeshift weapon brandished high.
"Leave, leave now. I'll forget you were ever here."
"No deal, I'm afraid," my fingers trailing over tender flesh. "White on white on white. You paid for my services, and I always deliver what's owed. I'd like you to meet Ms. Wren. She was ever so keen to come back home. Though, like I said, if you don't care for the end result, it's no concern of mine." The city didn't hear the reunion. The daily motions drowning out the noise of just one soul. Claws swung, a candlestick fell, a body ripped to ribbons, white on red. By dawn, I stood before a sea, A crimson ocean spread out atop a bedroom floor. Islands of bone and viscera, archipelagos around a continent of meat. What now? She asked, when she'd finally had her fill. Now, I said. Now, you find your own city. Track down your own harbour master. Find your own meals. Live your own life. You dig?
That was David Whittaker's Do You Dig, as read by Ron John. Ron John has written and published children's books, scripts and screenplays for animation and live action, musical lyrics and libretti. He is a student of strange phenomena, parapsychology, horror, and children's literature. You can see Ron John's videos and hear more of his work on the Spectre Collector blog, download his albums on the Spectre Collector Bandcamp site, and check out Ron John's hymns to the cannibal blood cult, the Fungus Sanguinarius, at the Fruits of Madness blog. Links to those will be in the show notes. Always good to hear from you, Ron John.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Our second story comes to us from Sonora Taylor. Sonora Taylor is the author of The Crow's Gift and Other Tales, Please Give, and Wither and Other Stories. Her short story, Hearts Are Just Likes, was published in Camden Park Press's Quoth the Raven, an anthology of stories and poems that put a contemporary twist on the works of Edgar Allan Poe. Her work has also been published in The Siren's Call, a bi-monthly horror e-zine, and Mercurial Stories, a weekly flash fiction literary journal. Her second novel, Without Condition, is now available in ebook and paperback. She lives in Arlington, Virginia, with her husband. Join me for Sonora Taylor's The Crow's Gift, first published in The Crow's Gift and Other Tales, 2017.
Tabitha loved the variety of birds she saw every morning on her walk to school. Now in fourth grade, she walked alone. However, as a small child, her mother had walked with her and taught her how to name each bird she saw along the way. sparrows, blue jays, wrens, and robins. They hid in trees and danced on the gravel. They picked up worms from rain-soaked sidewalks and shared the branches with foraging squirrels. Her walk to school would have been lonely now if it weren't for the birds. She loved their company, and she loved them all, even the crows. The crows were different from the others. She had seen them in groups, but only with each other. They stayed atop telephone poles or tucked into trees with no other birds or creatures. Perhaps they liked to be left alone. Or maybe they wanted friends and the other animals kept them away. Tabitha knew how that felt. Her classmate Jane sometimes had space for her at the lunch table, and many children quietly agreed if she asked to play. But no one asked her to play with them. No one sat at her table at lunch. No one invited her to their house after school. No one actually wanted to be her friend. Tabitha thus felt sorry for the lonely crows, and she tried her best to be their friend. When she walked past them, she'd wave and say, "Hello." She suspected the crows didn't speak English, but it was her hope that they knew in their own way that she was greeting them, that she was acknowledging them and saw them as friends. Her efforts were rewarded one morning when a silent crow suddenly squawked as she walked by. Tabitha felt a rush of excitement, but brushed it off. It was a bird. Birds made noise. Still, she greeted him. "Hello," she said, waving. Two squawks this time and a flap of his wings. It couldn't be, could it? Tabitha smiled all the rest of the way to school. Even if it was just pretend, it was nice to think that she had made a new friend. "Hey, look, it's Terrible Tabitha." Simon's taunts were mean, but not very creative. Creativity required intelligence. As usual, Tabitha kept her eyes averted in an attempt to ignore him and his horrible friends who snickered at his every word. Most of the children left Tabitha alone, but not Simon. Tabitha didn't know when or why Simon had chosen to be mean to her. Most days she could ignore him, but that didn't stop the gnawing sadness that grew when she saw him at school. His torment had grown out of nowhere. Now it was so ingrained in their routine that she simply saw it as something true, like the sun rising each morning or the birds migrating each winter. Simon always started the day by finding something about her to mock, usually her secondhand clothes, or her large glasses, or her flat pale hair, or the small amount of pudge around her middle. He cycled through them in such a pattern that she wondered if he had a collection of socks with different insults for Tabitha stitched on them for each day. Today, it was clothing. "Where did those pants come from? Goodwill's reject pile?" More laughter. Tabitha kept her back to them, wishing she could stop the slow flush rising up her cheeks. She was saved by the arrival of their teacher, Miss Patterson. Simon was cruel and stupid, but not enough of either to bully Tabitha in front of a teacher. The school day passed as normal, including more mockery from Simon at lunch. Rather than listen to his taunts, she sequestered herself in the library, leaving her lunch unfinished and her mind preoccupied with shame and loneliness. Her distraction remained during her lessons, making the hours pass all the more slowly. The final bell rang like music in her ears, and she walked home, shuddering against the growing chill in the wind. She gathered rocks as she walked, the stones ranging from mundane to beautiful. She liked decorating her windowsill with them. As she pocketed her gathered stones, she noticed one of the crows standing on a fence post. "Hello," she said, waving her fingers. "Squawk!" A flap of his wings. Surely that was an answer. It wasn't possible that could happen twice. She smiled. Maybe she did have a new friend. Tabitha remembered some uneaten crackers in her lunchbox. "Are you hungry?" she asked. The crow didn't squawk or flap, but stood still, watching her. She reached into her lunchbox and pulled out a cracker. Still seeing no response from the crow, she placed it on the ground slowly. Squawk! As she backed away, the crow swooped down onto the cracker, grabbing it and returning to his post in a single loop. He swallowed the cracker, flapped his wings, and squawked again. Then he flew away. Tabitha smiled. Even though it was brief, and with a bird, it was nice to have a friendly interaction that day. She left 3 whole crackers in a line on the post, in case the crow or his group returned. In her mind, she named him Timothy. Tabitha and her mother lived in an unremarkable home, a single story surrounded by a barren lawn. It's what they could afford. Tabitha never knew her father. She used to ask her mother about him, but only received clipped answers and teary eyes. She couldn't help but wonder if those conversations were one of the reasons her mother stopped walking with her to school. She'd learned to make it a point not to upset her, if that's what it took to keep her close. Despite her best efforts, though, Tabitha often saw how sad her mother was. Today was no exception. Tabitha saw her mother cooking, occasionally wiping her eyes between stirring the pot. She watched her mother silently, not wanting to disturb her. She knew it embarrassed her mother when Tabitha saw her cry, and Tabitha didn't want to sadden her further. After watching her for a few moments, she turned back around the corner, leaning against the wall and listening for signs that dinner would be ready soon. "Tabitha!" her mother called. She heard the skillet start to sizzle, bowls clinking on the counter. "Come set the table, please." She scurried into the kitchen, and her mother, red-eyed but otherwise appearing all right, laughed with a start. "Right there," she exclaimed. "Were you outside the kitchen the whole time?"
"I just come near the door," Tabitha lied.
Her mother smiled. "My little ghost." Tabitha grinned. She looked at the counter and saw dinner. Grilled cheese and soup, one of her favorites. Her mother saw it as basic food. Poor food, but Tabitha loved it. "Put the bowls and the plates on the table, please," her mother said. "The sandwiches are almost done." Tabitha did as she was told, placing everything perfectly. She didn't want to spill soup or leave any spoons askew on the napkin. A nice table usually made her mother smile. No sooner had she sat in her chair than her mother turned off the oven and carried a hot skillet of fresh sandwiches to the table. Tabitha watched hungrily as the sandwiches slid onto their plates. She immediately tucked into her sandwich, not bothering to wait for it to cool. "How was school today, darling?" her mother asked, slowly sipping her soup.
"It was fine."
She talked a bit about some of her lessons. Tabitha usually left her school stories short. She didn't want to trouble her mother with stories about Simon. Her mother listened quietly, sipping soup and giving an occasional mm-hmm. Tabitha knew her mind was elsewhere on whatever had been making her cry before. She wondered if hearing about the crows would cheer her mother up.
"I also made a new animal friend after school today."
Her mother looked up. "A new animal friend?"
"Yes," Tabitha said. "A crow, a big black one with shiny wings. I've named him Timothy."
"Timothy," her mother replied. "A strong name."
"Yes," Tabitha was glad to see her mother was interested. "I said hello, and he squawked at me. He even flapped his wings like he was waving at me."
"Crows are very intelligent birds. I bet he recognized you."
"That's what I thought. And I saw him after school and gave him a cracker. He squawked again and ate it and then flew away. So I left 3 more for him and his friends."
"Be careful feeding them, Tabitha." Her mother's face grew serious. "That was very nice, but he could have bitten or scratched you."
Tabitha's face flushed. She had been trying to cheer her mother up and instead made her worry. "I was careful," she said, her eyes cast down on her plate. "I put the crackers on the ground first."
"Oh, that's good then. You're a smart little girl." Tabitha smiled. All was well. "You mentioned Timothy and his friends," her mother said, sipping her water. "Do you know what a group of crows is called?"
"Just a group, right?"
"No, something more sinister." Her mother smiled slyly. "They're called a murder of crows."
"A murder?" Tabitha's eyes widened in shock, yet she couldn't help but grin with glee. A murder sounded so forbidden. That's right, her mother dabbed her mouth with a napkin, her soup gone and her sandwich mostly finished. Crows are quite friendly, as you saw today, but make sure you're friendly to them. They remember kindness, but they also don't forget cruelty, just like people. Tabitha nodded. I would never hurt them, she declared. Timothy's my friend. I'd never hurt him or his friends. Her mother patted her hand. And I'm sure they'll never hurt you. Kindness speaks volumes. She turned from Tabitha and looked out the window, seeing everything but what was outside. Tabitha's shoulders fell. Despite her best efforts, she'd lost her mother yet again. I'll clear the table, Tabitha said, wishing that people had been kinder to her mother. The next morning, Tabitha walked to school with the most happiness she had felt since she started walking alone. She hoped to see Timothy and the rest of his murder. Hopefully the growing cold hadn't scared him away. Did crows fly away for the winter? If so, they hadn't left yet. When Tabitha rounded the corner, walking near the old fence post, she heard a loud squawk. She looked at the tree it had come from, delight crossing her face. Good morning, Timothy, Tabitha called, waving. Squawk! He flapped his wings this time. Tabitha thought for sure he was waving. He flew across her, landed on the fence post, and let out another loud squawk, pointing his beak at the post. Was he beckoning her? Tabitha walked to the post, and Timothy took flight, but only to a nearby branch. She gasped when she looked at the post. Lying upon it were three colorful stones, neatly polished. They looked like the stones she collected, but nicer, less blemished. She bet he'd found them far off in the woods, somewhere only an animal would think to look. They're beautiful, she exclaimed. She quickly pocketed them and looked at Timothy in gratitude. He cocked his head at her. Thank you, she cried, waving. Squawk! He took flight, soaring into the thickest trees. Tabitha stuffed her hands into her pockets, keeping the stones pressed against her fingers. She vowed to pocket more of her crackers during lunch. All right, class, the lights went out and voices hushed. Please direct your attention to the board. Tabitha normally did this, but not today. She was too distracted. A crow had brought her a gift. In just 24 hours, a bird had shown her more kindness than her classmates had shown her all year. Today, Miss Patterson continued, we'll be learning about birds. This brought Tabitha's attention back to the board. On the wall, she saw a projection of an assortment of birds. Miss Patterson clicked through, and an albatross came up. Who can tell me what this bird is? Albatross, the class recited, and Tabitha continued to only listen with half an ear. She guessed Miss Patterson would go through the birds alphabetically. Sure enough, a short time later, she heard the class answer, Bluebird, she doodled in her notebook. However, upon hearing crow, she looked straight up. A painted picture of a crow stood in front of her. It looked small compared to Timothy. Yes, a crow, Miss Patterson said. Not to be confused with a raven. Crows are much smaller. Tabitha didn't think Timothy was as big as a raven, but he did have a good size to his feathers. Maybe the crow on the board was a girl. Can anyone tell me what they know about crows? Miss Patterson asked. Multiple hands shot up, including Tabitha's. Tabitha normally preferred to hide her answers from Miss Patterson's attention and Simon's taunts, but seeing the crow, an image of her friend, made her feel brave. Miss Patterson, however, saw her other classmates first. She pointed at various students who answered with the basics. They're black, said Susan. They dead things, said Jason. They travel in groups, said Jane. They're not called groups, Tabitha shouted. She knew she'd spoken out of turn, but she was too excited to care. Miss Patterson turned in her direction, her eyes wide. A group of crows is called a murder. Very good, Tabitha, Miss Patterson said, her look of shock becoming pleasant surprise. She's right. A flock of crows is called a murder. Tabitha beamed, proud to be praised in front of her classmates. "They're also very intelligent," she continued, unable to stop herself. "They recognize people. They know when you're nice and when you're mean, and they remember."
"That's stupid," said Simon, his voice cruel and familiar in the dark.
Tabitha's joy clattered to the floor, breaking into pieces.
"Animals are too dumb to know that stuff."
"Actually, Simon, Tabitha's right," Miss Patterson said. "Crows are highly intelligent creatures. They remember a lot more than other birds, and even some people."
"Like you, Simon," said Jason.
A portion of the class laughed, and Miss Patterson scolded them. Simon's silence spoke more harshly to Tabitha than anything he could say. She knew he had been embarrassed, and even though Jason insulted him, she'd be the one to pay for it. "Okay, moving on from crows," Miss Patterson continued once the class had settled down. "Who can tell me what this bird is?" As the rest of the class said, "Dodo," Tabitha returned to her silence and her doodles. She sketched a picture of Timothy to take her mind off Simon and her classmates. Soon school would be over, and she could see her real friend. Tabitha clutched the crackers she had saved from lunch in her pocket. She had deliberately saved them this time, though it had been difficult. She figured an emptier stomach was worth it if it meant being kind to a friend. As she rounded the corner, she saw four crows aligned on the fence post. Upon seeing her, three flew up to the tree. One stayed behind. "Squawk!" "Hello, Timothy," Tabitha replied. She walked up to the fence. Timothy inched back, but stayed on the fence. She was tempted to feed him a cracker from her hand, but she remembered what her mother had said about bites and scratches. Timothy could do either, even by accident. She instead placed the cracker on the fence. Timothy skittered to it quickly, once again downing the cracker in one gulp. "Squawk!" "You like them, do you?" Tabitha asked, smiling.
"Are you talking to a bird?"
Tabitha jumped at the familiar sound of Simon's cruel voice. The sound she thought she had escaped upon leaving school. "What are you doing here?" she asked. He didn't live anywhere nearby.
"Is that your crow friend?" he continued, ignoring her. "Hoping he remembers all the nice things you do?"
"I..." She was always at a loss for words around Simon. "I like to feed him is all. He's kind to me." Simon sneered. "It would take a dumb animal to be nice to you. Birds of a feather, right?" He laughed at his stupid joke. Tabitha remained quiet, looking at her feet. Timothy, on the other hand, spoke up. "Squawk! Squawk!" He had moved to a post further away, but stayed close enough to flap his wings in Simon's direction, voicing his discontent. Simon quickly scooped a rock from the ground. "Get out of here, you stupid bird!" Before Tabitha knew it, the rock was airborne, sailing in a straight line toward Timothy. Fortunately, Timothy was fast. He cleared the post, allowing the rock to sail under his feet. Simon bent to gather more rocks while Timothy retreated toward the tree. "No!" Tabitha cried. "You'll hurt him!" She grabbed Simon's arm and tried to stop him. Timothy disappeared into the trees, and Simon wrested his arm from Tabitha's clutch, sending her to the ground. Her glasses fell from her face. She felt her hands scrape as she landed on the rough dirt. Before she could reach them, Simon strode to her glasses and stomped them twice, shattering the lenses.
"See if your crow friend is smart enough to fix this for you," he said, and laughed as he ran off.
Tabitha stayed on the ground until he was out of sight, then sat up and leaned against the fence post. Her palms were bleeding. She picked up the remains of her glasses. Replacing them would be another expense, another burden. She dug a small hole and buried the remains, devising a quick lie to tell her mother about their whereabouts. She'd simply say she lost them. Her mother didn't need to know that someone had broke them, someone whose cruelty seemingly followed her wherever she went, even to places where she had found kindness. She cried quietly. She cried for her glasses, for her mother, for her own pride. Kindness shouldn't be so hard to come by. No cruelty so easy. Squawk! Tabitha looked to her left. Timothy stood on the ground a few feet away. He looked at her quizzically. She wiped her tears. Even if the world wasn't kind, Timothy was, and she could be too. She unearthed the remaining crackers from her pocket, several crushed into pieces, and spread them out over the lower fence post. "For you and your friends," she said. Timothy looked at the crackers, then flew to a higher post. He descended again, then dropped a smooth gray stone on the ground. Then he flew away. Tabitha forced a smile and pocketed the stone. She rose to her feet and started to walk home, preparing to face her mother. She looked behind her and saw Timothy and four other crows dining on the crackers. Timothy looked up, caught her eye, and flapped his wings. Tabitha had walked to school in silence the next morning, her heart and her eyes in pain. She was back to wearing an old pair of glasses from a year or two ago until she could get new ones. They were too tight and they gave her a headache, but it was what she had to deal with. She hadn't seen Timothy or the other crows. It was just as well. She didn't feel like talking to anyone or anything that day. So it was just her luck that today of all days, Jane rushed to talk to Tabitha as soon as she spotted her in the halls. "Tabitha!" she yelled. Tabitha tried to ignore her and pretend she hadn't heard, but Jane quickly followed her. "Tabitha, did you hear the news?" "What news?" Tabitha asked glumly, resigning herself to having to be social. "About Simon!" This got Tabitha's attention. She stopped and turned to face Jane, who was wide-eyed and obviously eager to share the news. "No," she said, hoping it was that he'd moved away. "What about him?" "He was attacked last night," Jane explained, "by wild birds." Tabitha's own eyes widened. "Wild birds?" "Yeah!" Jane couldn't hide the hint of excitement behind her tale of horror. "He was throwing rocks at birds last night, and these crows suddenly swooped on him. It was one big one, and then another, until they were all over him." Tabitha couldn't speak. Jane continued as they walked to their class. "They were scratching and pecking and everything, and he couldn't get up. They finally left when his mother and brother came outside. They told my mother, that's how I heard, because his brother had to stay with us while his parents took him to the hospital." "The hospital?" Tabitha asked, and they stopped just outside of their classroom door. "For pecks and scratches?" "It wasn't just pecks and scratches." Jane looked around her, then dropped her voice to a whisper. "They gouged one of his eyes out." Tabitha said nothing. Jane took her silence for disbelief and said, "It's true. I heard his mother say so. She said he'll have a patch for the rest of his life." The bell rang, and Jane slipped into the classroom. Tabitha stood still a few moments longer. It had to be a crazy rumor. Jane must have misheard Simon's mother. She walked into the classroom and noted Simon's empty desk. She sat quietly, thinking about Jane's story. Maybe it could be true after all. Tabitha stayed away from home after school ended. She leaned against the fence post, deep in thought, watching as the sky turned pink and orange with streaks of blue. She would be home before dark, but she wanted to stay out a little longer. She stared into the trees and the bramble. There were fewer birds every day, and the evenings grew quieter as winter strolled in. Tabitha felt the wind stinging her cheeks. Soon she wouldn't be able to stay outside for long, neither would the birds. She wondered if Timothy and his friends had already left. Perhaps they had moved south to get warm. Perhaps they'd fled after what happened to Simon. Surely Simon's mother had called animal control, though Tabitha didn't know how effective they'd be against birds. She hoped animal control hadn't found them, or wouldn't bother trying. Squawk! Tabitha did not jump or start. Deep down, she had known they hadn't left. She'd known they'd come to see her. Deep down, she'd known Jane's story was true. She turned her head to the left and saw Timothy alight onto the fence post. She looked at him in silence. She continued watching as Timothy laid what was in his beak on the post. She knew she should feel sorry for Simon and chase Timothy and his friends away, Tabitha knew how everyone else would feel had they been there. She knew how Miss Patterson would react, or Jane, or even her mother. She, however, could not react the way they would. She couldn't ignore the crows or reject them. She knew that in their own way, the crows had been kind to her. It was their nature, as well as hers. She gave a small smile. "Thank you, Timothy." "Squawk!" Timothy cocked his head, and Tabitha swore it was in salute. After a moment, Timothy quietly fluttered away. Tabitha watched the trees, listening for any squawks or rustling of wings. Perhaps she'd see them tomorrow. She'd wave to them if they appeared. She'd continue to bring them crackers and appreciate the gifts they brought her. She slowly looked away, grateful for their friendship, and closed her hand over a single eye.
That was Sonora Taylor's The Crow's Gift, as read by Michelle Kane. Michelle is from the Kansas City metropolitan area. She has a dulcimer and a bodhran that she never has time to play because she's too busy spending time working in a cube farm and being mom to her 6-year-old son and 11-year-old lab. She enjoys narrating stories whenever she gets the chance. Thank you, Michelle. Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of stories to tell, for now. Consider supporting our podcast on Patreon via the links in the show notes, and like us or leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Reviews help keep us on the charts so we can worm our way into the ears of new listeners. Our show is produced by editors Scott Silk, Seth Williams, and myself, Drew Sebastini. Theme music by Diane Severson, and website by Josh Lightsey. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. I hope you'll join us again next week as we infect your mind with more Tales to Terrify.
This presentation has been brought to you by the District of Wonders Network, dedicated to podcasting the finest genre fiction. You can learn more about the District of Wonders and their many literary productions at their website, www.districtofwonders.com. Thank you for listening.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.